This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the Creating Wealth Show with Jason Hartman. You're about to learn a new slant on investing, some exciting techniques, and fresh new approaches to the world's most historically proven asset class that will enable you to create more wealth and freedom than you ever thought possible. Jason is a genuine self-made multimillionaire who's actually been there and done it. He's a successful investor, lender, developer, and entrepreneur who's owned properties in 11 states, had hundreds of tenants, and been involved in thousands of real estate transactions. This program will help you follow in Jason's footsteps on the road to your financial independence day. You really can do it. And now, here's your host, Jason Hartman, with the complete solution for real estate investors.
Welcome to the Creating Wealth Show, episode number 794, 794. Thank you so much for joining me today. I am just returning from a wonderful mastermind weekend at my friend Ryan Moran's event, his backroom mastermind. And boy, that was really valuable. The power of the mastermind really cannot be overstated. It is just such an incredibly powerful thing to meet people, to be in this intimate setting. We were in the wilderness, in the mountains of Arkansas, of all places. It was just great. We went zip lining and really had some good camaraderie, ate meals together, actually cooked one meal together, and with a little help from the caterer. But it was a very woodsy experience. We were in cabins, and it was just great. I mean, I can't remember seeing that many stars in the sky for a long time. Once in a while, we got to do that, make sure we get out and see the Milky Way and realize that as large as our problems sometimes appear to be, we are insignificant in the overall scheme of things. Our little problems are just incredibly meaningless in the vastness of the universe. So let's always keep things in perspective when we get upset about things. You know, maybe our tenant didn't pay on time. Maybe they didn't pay at all. Maybe they left the house in bad condition. Maybe it's every month we go through that with them, or we've got problems with our spouse, our relationship, our job, whatever it is. The old saying, what are the two rules? First rule, don't sweat the small stuff. And the second rule is, it's all small stuff. So good to get some perspective like that once in a while. But yeah, you know, I just love the mastermind concept. I think you probably know that by now. And I hope you'll join us in Las Vegas, March 10th through 12th at the Venture Alliance Mastermind. We will be at the gorgeous Wynn Hotel, Steve Wynn's beautiful, extraordinary property there. And we've got a fantastic mastermind weekend planned. So again, Venture Alliance weekends always start Friday evening at 7 p.m. and they end Sunday afternoon at about 4:30. So, you know, Las Vegas is an incredibly easy place to fly in and out of. Lots of very direct connecting flights. So that's easy. It's just a super convenient location. One of the reasons I moved here, besides the no state income tax, have I told you lately about living in a no income tax state? It's a wonderful thing, folks. It's a wonderful thing. But join us, VentureAllianceMastermind.com. We've got a bunch of new content up on the Venture Alliance website, a lot of new photos from our past adventures, and maybe a lot of our members haven't even looked there lately and seen them. So go check out Venture Alliance Mastermind and join us as a guest. If you're not sure if you want to join, if you're on the fence about it, you know, you've heard me talk about it, and the importance of getting together with other real estate investors and other people that just want to expand and grow and do big things and do meaningful things. You know, that's what life is really about, doing some meaningful things that leave a legacy, that live beyond any of us. And, you know, that there's a lot of dimensions and purposes to the Venture Alliance Mastermind, but those are some of them, not the least of which fine dining, fun, networking, I mean, resources, a lot of great stuff. So Join us for that. Visit Venture Alliance Mastermind. Talk to your investment, VentureAllianceMastermind.com. Talk to your investment counselor about that. Also, I want to remind you about our unique new financing program. This is totally exclusive to us. I've talked about it on a couple of episodes, only two of them, where we will loan you money to buy properties in our network. And it's an incredibly good deal. I mean, it's not the Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac type stuff, which we're going to talk about today, because our guest, one of our lenders that you may have met at one of our events, maybe at a Meet the Masters event, maybe at the last Meet the Masters event, he is our guest today to talk about some awesome new Fannie Mae rules that make it a little bit easier for investors, that allow us to get more leverage. One of the key wonderful components about income property, leverage. And so the rules are easing up, and I think under a Trump administration, they're going to ease up even more. And you want to make sure you position yourself to take advantage of that. Remember, once you own the asset becomes malleable, where you have basically purchased an option to do different things in the future. But if you don't own the asset, you don't own that option. So for example, if financing becomes easier and rates become lower, you can refinance. If financing is harder and rates are higher, well, that limits the number of new entrants, new investors entering in to the investor pool and providing more housing stock to renters. So what happens there? Well, naturally, the law of supply and demand rules the day, and there's upward pressure on rents. That's good for you, right, as an investor. The best thing is when you get the lowest rate and the best financing and the most leverage, and then later you have that scenario that creates upward pressure on rents. But if you don't have that scenario, and I talk about this, of course, in the three dimensions of real estate concept that I pioneered, or, well, it was always there. I guess I didn't invent it. I just noticed it and explained it better than anybody else. So how's that? I will take credit for that part. Certainly, the phenomenon existed before Jason Hartman, your humble host. So that is, it allows you to take advantage of capital gains on your property and appreciation on your property. So that's really good too. And our financing, talk to your investment counselor about that. Check out the last couple of podcasts where I talked about that, and you can get more details on that. Also, if you are interested in diversifying your portfolio, look, I always think that owning the physical asset is the best deal. It definitely offers the highest return because it's multidimensional. It's the most tax-favored asset class in America. It's the most historically proven asset class in the entire world, and it's the best. But my second favorite investment, what is my second favorite thing? Well, my second favorite, that is owning the paper. It's being the lender when you do hard money loans and private lending. There are some pretty good options there. Now, why is that? Well, I think you already can tell from what I just said why it's not my most favorite asset. It's not, because it doesn't offer as high a return. It doesn't offer tax advantages. In fact, it's tax disadvantaged, right? Because you have to pay tax on the income from interest that you charge. But there is one really good thing about it. It's simple. It's really simple and easy, and it's very scalable. You know, every time you buy a property, there comes some real responsibility with that. Now, there's responsibility that comes with everything. Having a stupid savings account where you're losing money every month is a responsibility too. But loaning the money has less moving parts, right? Because, you know, you don't own the physical asset. It doesn't offer as high a return, but it's simpler and it's more scalable. So if you have a lot of money to invest, it's certainly better than the stock market. It's better than those Wall Street crooks. Now, I know, lately, since the surprising Trump victory, the stock market has been on a tear. And, you know, I'm human. I get a little jealous. Once in a while, I question myself. I think, did I make a mistake? And, you know, if I make a mistake, I really try to live by my own rule. Here it is. You ready? Three things you do when you make a mistake. If you mess up, well, I guess that is the mistake. So there's really only two things you do. If you mess up, then you fess up, and then you make up, okay? Fess up and make up are the things you got to do after you make a mistake. You know, if I make a mistake, if I'm wrong about something, I think you know if you've been listening for the last 793 episodes, you hear me admit my mistakes. You know, I've told you what I've been right about. I've been right about a lot of predictions, but I've been wrong about a few, startlingly wrong, like interest rates being one of them. That was pretty bad. I did not predict low interest rates lasting this long. And they have been going up, though. So maybe I'll be right about that. Which, by the way, a lot of articles I'm seeing about inflationary pressures. Lots of those. And I, on the plane on the way back from the cosmopolitan area of Northwest Arkansas, where, by the way, I visited the Walmart headquarters, the incredibly humble, modest, unimpressive Walmart headquarters. Now, here we have, folks, the biggest retailer. I mean, I think they are the biggest retailer on planet Earth, right? I know they're the biggest in the United States, but I think they're the biggest on planet Earth, if I'm not mistaken. Now, you know, one of our foreign listeners maybe can correct me. Certainly, IKEA does not beat Walmart, do they? I don't think so, but IKEA's a pretty big deal. Anyway, you know, we've all probably assembled one of those pieces of furniture at one time or another, and it's, you know, why can't they make those instructions a little better? You got me. But anyway, the Walmart home office, incredibly humble place. But I drove around Bentonville, Arkansas when I arrived and checked that out because I had a little time before the mastermind meeting. And, you know, some things in life stick with you. Little tangent here real quickly. One of the things that always stuck with me is that interview that I heard with the CEO of Walmart, and this was, a few years ago, and it really stuck with me, and it's kind of how I feel about my business, too, and Walmart gets criticism from every angle, right? They just can't seem to do right by anybody, at least in the lamestream left-wing media. They can't do right by anybody, because then they get bashed for being, get this, too competitive. Oh, that's the new sin in the minds of the overpaid liberal newscasters and reporters, right? The people that make many millions of dollars a year and criticize every business person. It's mind-boggling, you know, how easy their job is and how overpaid they are, and yet they, you know, criticize every small business person that wants a tax break, right? But of course, they criticize the big businesses too. They criticize Walmart. And so they criticize them for not paying high enough wages. They criticize them for being too competitive and putting smaller retailers out of business. And listen, you know me, I don't like the big corporatocracy because I think the big corporatocracy becomes fascist. It gets in bed with the government. And Obama was one of the biggest sinners in this area, by the way. Obama was a socio-fascist. That's how I described him, because he was in bed with all the big companies and they were in bed with him. And, you know, people, of course, will say Trump's doing that, and I don't know, it's too early to tell, basically, T-E-T-T, too early to tell, okay, so we got to wait at least 100 days, if not 6 months, to pass judgment on Trump, and I don't know, that press conference the other day was kind of a rambling, I don't know. It was refreshing to hear him just talk without a teleprompter. Now, his predecessor would have had, you know, those two little teleprompter things up there. Trump didn't have any teleprompter, and he just talked. So you knew at least it was real, right? It was real. But, God, he is so weird. He says the weirdest things, and he's... Anyway, enough of that. But Walmart. Back to Walmart. What were we talking about, Jason? We got to get to our guest. So Walmart is criticized for, like, everything, right? You all know this. You know, if you've been around a while and you read the news, listen to the news, you hear all this hate against Walmart. And some of it's a little bit deserved, but not as much as the media would portray. But here's the thing. The Walmart CEO was on this interview, and this just totally stuck with me. And it made me feel good about the way I run my business and my philosophy. Is he you know, the reporter came at him with a dig, a real dig, and said, look, you know, you've got this reputation. These suppliers come to your headquarters here in Bentonville, and they want to sell their widget. I mean, this is not what they said. I'm obviously paraphrasing, but this is the gist of it, right? They want to sell their widget in your stores, and you just beat them down. You grind them down. You make them give a better price, and they leave here thinking, gosh, how can I make any money selling to Walmart or selling through Walmart? Well, you know, Walmart's a big deal. If you get into Walmart, you know you're going to sell a lot of stuff. And Walmart's picky about quality, okay? So they want quality and they want it cheap so that they can sell it cheap, right? Walmart is the discounter, the discount store. That's what they're known for. That's their brand. That's their USP, their unique selling proposition. And the CEO comes right back, looks the camera right in the eye, and I tell you, this impressed me. He said, we are the agent of the customer. It is our duty to bring our customers the lowest prices and the best quality. We are the agent of the customer. I love that. I mean, I love that. Now, every company, you know, they got a few audiences that they've got to please. They got to please their shareholders. They got to please their employees and their, you know, suppliers and employees. I'll lump those two together. And they got to please their customers, right? So it's hard to, you know, there's a balance between pleasing all these audiences, right? And it's not easy to do. It's not easy to do because, you know, theoretically, if you please one and you're more generous with that audience, well, then you're taken away from the other audience. So, you know, when you have a business, you have the investors. Even if you're a one-person company, then you are the investor in your company, right? And you got to get them a decent return. You got to please your employees because, you know, they give their, you know, a third of their life to you probably, right? And you got to please them and take care of them. And you got to please your customers because they're the ones that have faith in you and give you their money. Right? And that's why I say, like, you know, I hear investors sometimes think wrongly about their tenants. You know, in the final analysis, your tenant is your customer when you're a real estate investor. They're the one giving you their money. And I know tenants, a lot of times they're irresponsible, and a lot of times they don't pay, and they don't take good care of the house. I totally get it, okay? And a lot of times tenants are immature little babies. You know, they can act like, hey, employees can act like that too, right? Hey, I guess shareholders can act like that too, right? Everybody can. We've all got a little bit of that in us from time to time. And, you know, but you got to take care of all these audiences, and your tenants are your customer in the final analysis. So keep that in mind next time you're frustrated with your tenant, right? Jawad Mia, we've had him on the show a few times. When the Venture Alliance was in Dubai last year, we took the Venture Alliance Mastermind Group to Dubai, and Jawad Mia came and spoke to us for, I don't know, about 2.5 hours. It was fantastic. And he just, you know, we've got this small, intimate group. Everybody got to ask him questions and grill him on things. And he writes this fantastic newsletter called Stray Reflections. And I was reading it on the plane on the way here from the cosmopolitan area of, you know, Fayetteville and Bentonville, Arkansas. No offense to our Arkansas listeners, right? Hey, listen, my mom lives in Alabama, and that's not exactly cosmopolitan either. But I was reading his newsletter, and God, I gotta tell you, for a Muslim writer, right, who named his newsletter after a Muslim philosopher, right, Stray Reflections. And he's been on the show a couple of times. He spoke to us when we were in Dubai. He said in that newsletter, unequivocally, he said, check your biases at the door. Trump is good for business. Okay? And he's good for job creation. He's good for wage increases. He's going to cause inflation. and that's good for real estate investors. I got to get Jawad back on the show. He's been on a few times. We've also got Harry Dent coming back on, and Harry just drives me crazy. You know, he's got a new book out, and I'm listening to his audiobook, and I love Harry's work in terms of Harry Dent we're talking about, in terms of economics from a demographer's point of view. I think it's brilliant. It really works, right? But the problem with Harry Dent and all these people like this is they lump real estate in as if it's this single entity. They don't differentiate between linear markets, cyclical markets, and hybrid markets. In other words, high-priced markets and low-priced markets. And they talk about real estate. What's real estate going to do? Real estate's going to go up. Real estate's going to go down. Real estate's in a bubble. Real estate's going, it's on the upswing. Whatever it is, right? They talk about it like it's this single entity. It's not! Real estate needs to be segmented. First, by market type. Linear, cyclical, or hybrid. Of course, I've talked about this a lot on the last 793 episodes, so go back and listen if you're a newer listener, and welcome to the show, by the way. So that needs to be segmented. It needs to be segmented by product type, by price segmentation, because, of course, you could look at a linear market like Memphis, for example, or St. Louis, or Kansas City, or any of our linear markets, right? Atlanta, not as linear as it used to be, more hybrid now. But you could look at these markets, and of course you've got low-priced homes in those markets, and high-priced homes, and middle-priced homes in every market. In every city, it's like that. So you've got to segment by price, by product type, by market type, but first by market type. That's the most important thing, because it's all about the LTI ratio, the land to improvement ratio, right? Super important. So Jawad Mia's newsletter, fascinating. We do make that available to Venture Alliance members, by the way. One market I want to talk about, the poster child for cyclical markets, and it is having its bubble time, pop. I knew this would happen. Of course, if you listen to the show, you know it would happen too. It was so obvious, right? You know this would happen, and I talked about it before. Vancouver, British Columbia. The beautiful city of Vancouver. I love Vancouver. Had my very first long-distance relationship with a girl from Vancouver many years ago. She was gorgeous, gorgeous Canadian girl. But she talked kind of funny, you know? I remember one time we were in Beverly Hills when she was down for a visit when I lived in Orange County. And we were at the Hard Rock Cafe back when the Hard Rock Cafe was sort of cool. It's not anymore, just so you know. So you can obviously tell this was a few years back. And I remember her asking the waiter a question, or the waitress a question, or the server, sorry, don't mean to be politically incorrect, the server, asking a question. And she asked a question about, get this, pasta. Pasta. Not pasta. Pasta. I just started laughing. Oh, I love the way Canadians talk. I love our Canadian friends and neighbors. They're great. But Vancouver is a disaster already. Sales have plunged by 40% in Vancouver. And our Venture Alliance member, Elizabeth, thank you for posting this, by the way. She posted it in our content group. We invite all of our Venture Alliance members to be in two special Facebook groups. One is the Venture Alliance group, but then there's another one that's optional, is our content group, where we review a lot of articles, discuss them, discuss news items, current events, and talk about some of them on the show. A lot of this content group on Facebook ends up becoming content for the podcast. So I appreciate Elizabeth posting this Seattle Times article, and she said, preview of coming attractions in Seattle. Yes, I think so, Elizabeth. So I think you've got that pretty well nailed. Every cyclical market, it has its cycles, and, you know, I just, I'm not a fan of those markets. I've become too conservative at my older age. Well, I got a lot of time left. I hope so. And I think all of you do too, because remember, one of the biggest problems you're going to face is too much life left at the end of the money. So you better plan for that. Too much life left at the end of the money. It's good to live a long time, but it requires a lot of planning and investing in order to make that equation work, because in case you haven't noticed, the government is broke, okay? So that's why we're here to help you with the most historically proven asset class in the world. All right, I thought this would be a short little intro. It could really just be a whole show. Gosh, let's roll. I got to tell you about these Fannie Mae. This financing has gotten a lot better. So here is Joe, one of our lenders, to talk to you about how financing has gotten a lot better. Here he is. It's my pleasure to welcome Joe back to the show. He is one of our lenders. He spoke at our Meet the Masters event. He's been out to several of our events over the years and has helped a lot of our clients obtain something that isn't always so easy to obtain, especially nowadays, or especially a few years ago. It's gotten a little easier, and that is none other than financing. We all love leverage because it really makes our real estate deals sing. It makes them fly, and it's not just about the leverage. It's not just about the tax deduction of the interest, but it's also, of course, about my trademark term, inflation-induced debt destruction. Inflation-induced debt destruction, one of the other hidden wealth creators of income property as an investment. So we've got some good news on the financing. It is loosening up a little bit, slowly happening here. Joe, tell us about this recent Fannie Mae rule change that allows borrowers to put less money down and get more leverage on more properties. What's the scoop?
Yeah, so recently, you know, Fannie Mae, who constantly, by the way, update their guidelines nearly every month with some kind of little change or nuance to their guidelines. But one of the major ones recently was they will allow borrowers, investment property buyers, to put 20% down now for the first 10 financed homes.
Yeah, let's compare that to what it was before. So before, they could put 20% down. Well, it used to be on the first four properties. And then I believe it went to the first six properties. But now it's all 10, right?
So here's how the trend worked. Before, it was just the first four properties you could put 20% down. And then numbers five through 10 require 25% down. And then Freddie Mac came out last year and said, we'll do 20% down up to six financed homes. And then Fannie Mae followed suit with those guys, allowing 20% down for six, and then still requiring 25 down for seven through 10. And now recently they're just flat out 20% down for the first 10 financed homes, which is great for folks who are buying more homes.
Yeah, it is. It's good. So you can get that first 10 investment properties. Now, if you're married, or, you know, and if you're not, maybe this is a good incentive. You can do 10 per spouse. So 20 for the family, for the couple. But of course, both spouses need to be able to qualify. But it's 10 each at 20% down. So you can do, you know, potentially for a couple, 20 properties with only 20% down. It's pretty good.
Well, keep in mind that the primary home is part of that count as well. So if both spouses are on the primary home, that will really take up two spots of the 20. So a lot of the time we will refinance the primary into one of the spouses' names to make it a total of, you know, 19-9 for the guy or the borrower with the primary home, and then 10 for the spouse without any primary home debt obligation.
A lot of complex stuff goes into what I have, this is another one of my little trademark terms, I call it mortgage sequencing. I came up with that term in about 2010, I believe. You know, that's important, and that's exactly what you're talking about there, Joe. So, okay, this is good news. Now, the bad news is rates are a little higher, and the trend is, and the predictions from most people, including you, is that rates are going to go up even more. So that creates some real urgency to lock in this three-decade-long fixed-rate financing, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think that, you know, obviously the 30-year fixed-rate residential financing is still the best option out there for our investors and our buyers, as opposed to, like, commercial financing or any other vehicle. So, the urgency, I think, is now there to try and lock in as many deals as you can or lock in that rate on your properties as soon as you can, because, you know, I think that with the new administration, if they do get those bills appropriated to spend $1 trillion on infrastructure, and if they do overhaul the tax code and basically put money back in people's pockets, then we're going to see some inflationary concerns. And once we see inflation start to rise, then I think our mortgage rates will begin to rise in tandem. So will that happen in the next 6 months? Maybe not, but certainly over the course of the first 2 years in the administration, I think we'll see that.
Right. And Joe, I call that inflationary benefits. Most people call it concerns like you did.
I think the street has somewhat priced it into the market already. You know, they're just predicting that it will happen. So that's why we're seeing rates elevated since the election, because pre-election rates were about, 3/8 of a point or maybe even a half a point better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very interesting. So Trump is going to have the opportunity, though, to appoint a new Fed chair. I mean, is that going to mean that, that the Fed will be a little more friendly to the Trump administration? I don't know what you think. Tell us what you think. But I think that Yellen is not really a Trump fan. She was appointed by Obama,
It's hard to tell. I can just say from the last two Fed chairmen, they were both very dovish in their approach. They were quite cautious. I think with a new Fed chairman, you might see a little bit more some flexibility there in terms of what they might do with the Fed funds rate, et cetera. I do think that... under the Trump administration, not only will we see rates rise, though, possibly, but we also see home prices continue to rise.
Yeah, I think so here's the thing, and this is one of those counterintuitive things in life. And I saw this so many years in the traditional real estate business when I was in the traditional business. And this sentiment was echoed by everybody in the know in that part of the industry. And it went like this. You've got all these potential buyers sitting on different levels of fences, right? Look at it this way, right? This is kind of a metaphor. And every time the rates bump up, the lowest level of fence sitters gets off the fence and buys something. And then the rates pop up again and another whole swath comes into the market and buys something. So this may be the reason, it's one of the reasons, that inventory is so tight nowadays. I mean, there's a very low selection of good property. I mean, there's lots of crappy inventory out there. There's never a shortage of that. But good inventory is in short supply, and people got to act fast. A lot of our clients, they get their... They say they want that property, and, if they think about it for a couple of days, it's gone. So, that's just the nature of the market today. And Joe, I'm sure you see that all the time. But when rates go up, that causes urgency and it gets people to take action. People are they act more out of fear of loss than desire for gain. When rates are going down, they kind of wait. There's not a lot of urgency. They're like, rates are going down and, I'm just going to wait till they get lower, right? And this is the same thing that happens, in the overall economy when you have inflation or deflation, right? And that's why deflation is such a terrible economic malady, because it causes people to wait. And if everybody just waits, then nobody trades. And, that's a disaster, obviously, right? Because the velocity of money slows. You know.
I think it's a very common trend that when rates start to rise, those fence sitters will jump and take action. I think the good part about locking in rates, I think, with a lender like us is, we do have the ability to renegotiate the rates should the market turn and go south again and get a little bit better prior to closing. So really, we offer the best of both worlds in the sense of, hey, let's protect the rate against a possible rising rate environment while you're in process to close. But also, should it improve, we'll renegotiate that rate at no cost.
Yeah. So tell us about your rate lock. How long is it? Do people have to pay a fee to lock the rate? How does it work?
No fee to lock the rate, but we will lock the rate for a certain period of time based on the anticipated closing date written into the contract. So based on the turnkey provider's timeline in renovating and delivering the home, we're typically going to lock the rate a week or 2 weeks past the anticipated contract closing date. We want to give them a little bit of time just in case something were to arise in renovation. Maybe it's a weather-related delay or there's a... they open up a wall and there's some kind of structural issue that needs to be remediated or fixed. And we like to give and lock the rate and protect the rate for the borrower through at least the anticipated closing date, but sometimes even beyond that, in case of unforeseen delays. Now, the maximum length of time we could lock a rate for is 85 to 90 days. You know, the shortest period of time we could lock a rate for is 10 days. So, you know, it just depends on where, and then each individual deal has its own individual characteristics, I suppose. But a lot of it depends on the turnkey provider and their turn time.
Now, I hate to ask you this question, Joe, but I'm going to ask it. And the reason I hate to ask you this question is because, you know, a podcast is perennial. People might listen to this much later. And obviously, this is a very time-sensitive question I'm going to ask you. But what are the rates today for an investor? And just explain to our listeners the difference between non-owner-occupied interest rates and owner-occupied interest rates. What is the typical delta between those two? Investors do pay a little bit of a premium, a little slightly higher rate. Yeah.
Okay, so assuming all things being equal with one's credit score, let's say it's an excellent credit score of 740 or above, you know, the down payment requirement is going to, you know, rate's going to be indicative of a couple of things. The down payment, the 20% versus 25% is going to have a difference in rate. Obviously, the credit score plays a factor in rate, but also the property type, which you mentioned, Jason, whether it's a primary residence or an investment property, whether it's a single family investment property or a multi-unit investment property, you're going to have what we call loan level price adjustments to rate. So specifically on the property type, if it's an investment property, single family home versus a primary residence, single family home, the delta, so to speak, or the add-on to rate or the loan level price adjustment, whatever you want to call it, for that individual investment property, single family home, is going to be about 0.5 point to 0.75 point higher in rate, you know, depending on the down payment and credit score of the borrower. So again, if you put 20% down, the rate today would probably be somewhere like 4.99 with no points. If you put 25% down, we're going to lock in 4.625 with no points. So that same rate as a primary residence could today be 4% or 4.125 for that same 30-year fixed rate.
Okay, give us the investor, just repeat the investor rates. Mm-hmm.
Investor rate today for 20% down with a good credit score is 4.99.
Okay, and 25% down, what does that make it?
4.625.
Okay, and that's a 30-year fixed rate loan.
30-year fixed rate, mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. Those rates are incredible. Incredible.
Yeah,
incredible.
That's without,
they're
that's
still
with
great.
No points as well. So we're not charging points to buy down the rate there. Some lenders in this space, because the loan amount is so small at times, will charge those additional points to get competitive in rate.
Okay, good. Wow. That's just incredible. So where do you think the overall real estate market is going? And maybe any thoughts on the economy in general, if you want to share them, under the new administration?
Well, I think, you know, a lot of folks in our industry are, you know, looking forward to a Trump administration, being that he's a real estate guy himself. So, you know, I do think, like I said earlier, housing prices, I think prices will continue to rise. I think, albeit, you know, in the traditional sense of maybe 1% to 3% appreciation year over year, we're not going to see the 5%, 6%, 7% appreciation that we did prior to, you know, in the early parts of the 2000s and prior to the crash. So I think you'll see normal appreciation. Rates, again, may continue to rise. But overall, I think we're welcoming the new administration in terms of real estate. We think that he may replace the head of the CFPB or even get rid of Dodd-Frank altogether, which would be
slow down a second here. I just want to make sure people know what the CFPB is. That's the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. This is the new agency created under the Dodd-Frank Act. And many of it, you know, we've spent a lot of time on this show talking about the Dodd-Frank Act. But just for those of you who don't know, that's something that came out of the financial crisis. It's been very restrictive on lenders. You know, it's yet again another example of how people that really don't understand business or the real estate market or economics or anything, you know, government bureaucrats like Barney Frank created this 2,200-ish page bill that people have a very difficult time understanding, and it puts a lot of roadblocks up, and it really gets in the way. And Trump has specifically said he is going to dismantle Dodd-Frank. Now, he may not succeed, but there are a lot of interim steps in that, right? He might dismantle part of it. He could soften it. He could change the enforcement of it. So even without changing the actual act, you know, you can change the enforcement, right? There's quite a bit of latitude there, and something good is going to happen. I mean, it's good for us. So what about the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau? What were you saying about that, though?
You know, I think the head of that right now, the leader of that bureau right now, is someone who the Trump administration has indicated they may replace, you know, with someone who is a little bit more friendly to, you know, administering the, you know, Dodd-Frank, for example, and creating some leniency that doesn't exist today with the current leader of the CFPB. So we're kind of waiting to see what happens there with leadership of the CFPB and whether or not that will in turn lead to those, you know, alleviations of the restrictions of the Dodd-Frank Act.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, good. So that's going to be good news in terms of more money flowing into real estate because there's more financing availability, you know, I mean, assuming it happens, of course. And so that's great news. What else do you see?
You know, I think that, you know, overall, as the economy grows or as these bills get appropriated by the Trump administration for, you know, creating more jobs in the U.S., overall, it's just a generally good mood to create for the real estate investor and for homeownership in general. I think that regardless of where rates are, people are still going to be purchasing homes and the dream of buying homes in the U.S. is not diminishing, I think, in any fashion whatsoever, although we rely on a lot of rental income properties to create this wealth for our buyers. However, I do think that overall that the mortgage level of ownership and the home ownership level is not going to diminish under this administration.
Yeah, and as I've said before, I actually wish the home ownership rate would decline because I like renters, and I actually think it's kind of artificially high. But yeah, I do think under Trump, it's actually going to increase and improve, and he's going to use that as, you know, for bragging rights. It's at really the lowest level it's been in about five decades. But overall, you know, you either play it as a capital gains thing. If the market is on fire, everybody's buying properties, then the prices are going to go up. If the market's not on fire and everybody's sitting tight and renting properties, then the rents are going to go up. So you have one or the other. And that's the beauty is that, you know, you have a multidimensional asset class. So you can work with different dimensions and adapt to the market at that given time. And so that's a wonderful thing. Talk to us a little bit about this sort of unseen thing that happens in the market. You know, it's everybody sees interest rates. Everybody sees the requirement for how much do you have to put down. But what they don't really see, and it's, you know, I would call this like a softer item, but it's really not soft at all. It's a hardcore item. And that is, they don't see either the ease or the difficulty of qualifying.
Oh my God.
And I know this is the one that drives everybody nuts. And this really, we almost have to segment this into, you know, two categories of people. One is the traditional home buyer, the owner occupant, and the other is the investor. And it is hard to qualify. And that limits the amount of competition of investors out there putting more rental properties on the market, more rental supply, and that increases rents ultimately because, you know, it puts upward pressure on rents. And so it's what I want you to do is see that everything negative also has a positive. And there's a positive component to that. You know, when it's really easy to qualify, everybody is increasing the supply of inventory, right? You know, and I'm talking about rental inventory, and then your rents get suppressed. You see downward pressure on rents when there's more competition for tenants. So, you know, it depends what side of the equation you're on. But talk to us about difficulty of qualifying or ease of qualifying. I mean, it's getting a little easier, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, listen, I'm a veteran loan officer. I wrote loans and wrote paper long before the crash or the recession.
How long have you been in the business?
16 years.
Okay.
So went through the phase of, you know, where it was super easy to qualify for folks to buy properties and hardly produce any documentation. So, you know, is it a good thing that now we're underwriting files and writing more quality paper since the recession? I think absolutely.
Overall, however, it's better, sure.
Yeah, I think, but ultimately the knee-jerk reaction to that, correction in terms of underwriting and documentation was very severe. I think we're just seeing now, 3, 4, 5 years after the recession, coming out of the recession, we're seeing some of those guidelines be become a lot more less restrictive and become a little bit more lenient for borrowers. I think your self-employed borrower still has the biggest burden of documentation to produce, because a lot of those guys will have multiple companies or multiple K-1s, and they'll have their, you know, various income streams, as opposed to the salaried employee who is still relatively over-documented, I think, but certainly not as much as a self-employed borrower. So as we proceed into this administration and maybe the leniency created in the Dodd-Frank Act, then we might see these compliance regulations that we're so severely held to kind of get released and relieved a little bit for us, which in turn will help us, you know, push loans through faster and close loans quicker and require less of our borrowers. Because right now we're still double crossing the T's and double dotting the I's, and underwriting is very tight.
Yeah, it's very difficult to qualify, in other words. And, you know, look, folks, this is a pendulum. It's always swinging back and forth, just like societies throughout history. You know, society swings to the liberal side, then it swings to the conservative side. And, you know, everything's always swinging back and forth. You know, fashions change. Everything changes all the time. Okay. And the beauty of income property is that once you buy it and once you own it and you control it as a direct investor, you're basically getting yourself an option to make a change later. So, for example, you could take out financing today, close on your property, own it for a year, and say, for example, the requirements get easier and the interest rates go down. You can refinance. You know, you've got to get in the seat to where you own the property, because then you have options and you have control. Until then, you're just an outsider, and the prices go up without you, and you're left behind. You know, the ship leaves the dock. So that's what you want to do. You want to get yourself in the position where you have options. So that's very important. Good. This has been very informative, Joe. I really appreciate you joining us. And you can contact Joe through any of our investment counselors. They can put you in touch with them. Just go to jasonhartman.com. They'll get you in touch with Joe. They can set up a conference call with you or an email introduction, whatever it takes. And of course, many of you listening have been to our live events and you met Joe in person, and he's a nice guy and he's got a great accent. And, you know, he's a good loan officer too, just as a side benefit.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. All right. We appreciate having you on, Joe. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. Please be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes. Be sure to check out the show's specific website and our general website, hartmanmedia.com, for appropriate disclaimers and terms of service. Remember that guest opinions are their own. And if you require specific legal or tax advice or advice in any other specialized area, please consult an appropriate professional. And we also very much appreciate you reviewing the show. Please go to iTunes or Stitcher Radio or whatever platform you're using and write a review for the show. We would very much appreciate that. And be sure to make it official and subscribe so you do not miss any episodes. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode.